Right now, time once again to welcome in Brian Ross and Real News. Brian joins us on a Thursday morning, and we take a look at news stories that are in the headlines. And good morning, Brian.
Well, good morning to you, Marshall. Another slow news week since we last talked.
You know, at 67 years of age, I was in radio when we went through Watergate, okay? We even had the station I was working at with CBS News. And back then, we covered the Watergate hearings live. And I always remember that because of, well, first of all, it was Watergate. And second of all, our general manager, Joe Shuler, was a wild guy. It was sold to Kentucky Fried Chicken, finger looking good. Believe it or not, that was the underwriting support for that. I look back on Watergate and I look now what's going on in Washington. And I have to say, for the first time in my 67 years, I really am frightened. Everybody said that Richard Nixon wanted to be king, and he did. There's no doubt about it. But there were restraints, and there were guardrails, and that didn't happen. Well, when you add up all the dots, and just tell me if I'm crazy, you add up all the dots of rushing the Supreme Court appointment. So you hopefully have a 6-3 conservative lead on the court. You have the president basically saying that if he doesn't win the election, he's not sure whether he'll accept the results or not. This country is in for a hell of a last quarter of the year.
Without a doubt, we are in a history-making period of the American experience, that's for sure. And it's very interesting today. The Richard Nixon Library out in California is releasing a series of letters between former President Nixon and current President Donald Trump. Trump written when he was a 30-year-old businessman in New York, writing to Nixon, who 8 years after he resigned in disgrace, writes him, "I think that you are one of the country's great men, and it was an honor to spend an evening with you." They had dinner at the 21 Club in New York. There's a lot of similarities between the two men. They both have an authoritarian streak. Of course, they both cannot stand the media because they are targets of the media. And it's just a fascinating comparison that we are, as you say, I think rightly, those who lived through that summer of the Watergate hearings leading to the resignation, we see all this happening, but even more starkly in a way because of the implied threat that we'll see what happens, what Mr. Trump says, asked if he would leave the office, win, lose, or draw.
And, you know, there's a lot of my friends that are Trump supporters, and fine, I don't disown friends for being Trump supporters. But what amazes me is people just cannot add up the dots. This is, everybody laughed at Bill Maher when he was first elected. Trump was first elected, and Bill Maher has said all along, if you think he's leaving, you're wrong. Everybody laughed at him. That laughter subsided a little bit about 3 months ago. Now nobody's laughing at that comment at all because when you have an attorney general that is your hand-picked, your protector, when you have a Senate that will go along with anything you want to do, when you can now increase your Supreme Court to 6-3 and then admit that Supreme Court would be beneficial in you winning the election, you see how serious of a situation that this country is in.
Well, elections obviously have consequences. Yep. Those who did not vote or stayed home 4 years ago may think about what they should do this time around. The only real cure for all this, Marshall, is a decisive election outcome by one man or the other. And it's really important that everybody vote, and we're not going to say whatever side you're on, you need to vote, and the more this country votes, the better. And that's why it's so troubling to see all the efforts by Republicans around the country in various ways trying to make it difficult to vote. And that is stunning to me. One of the most sort of underreported aspects of this are the various secretaries of state led by the now governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, and other key Republican states, where they say they have disqualified voters because they have the name John Smith, and there's probably a John Smith in Pennsylvania. Therefore, they require all John Smiths to re-register. They send them a postcard. Lots of people think it's a scam. They don't know if it's really true. and they've knocked off hundreds of thousands of eligible voters based on this, including, as I was doing some reporting on this, a distant cousin of Martin Luther King in Atlanta, who had voted from her home in the same place for some 70 years. She went to the polls 2 years ago and learned that she was no longer qualified. Her name was a common name, and it got stricken. They said, well, we sent you a postcard, and she had no recollection at her advanced age of any such thing. So that's just one of the many aspects of what's going on as there are efforts to make it difficult to vote. They call it voter suppression. And voter suppression seems to me is okay if you're just going negative on your opponent. That's fine. That's how politics works. But to make it difficult to vote, and, you know, frankly, while we don't have a national holiday on Election Day, 24 hours of voting, so people who, whatever shift you work, whatever your personal life is like, you have a chance to vote somewhere within 24 hours, that has to be what we do going forward.
Well, we'll see what happens, but we all know that there's going to be a great deal of mail-in votes this year, so there is a good likelihood that on election night we will not know, unless there is a massive turnout on one side or the other, we will not know who won the presidency, probably for at least a day or two, and there's already lawyers lined up on both sides, waiting to contest. So it's going to be a scary and interesting last quarter, like I said. But how about yesterday? Now, I know that there's people out there that don't understand Black Lives Matter, don't understand what a Black American feels like when out in public. But to have happened what happened yesterday, where only one person was indicted, and that one person was indicted because some bullets went through a wall and could have killed somebody else. How can someone not be charged with murder, some form of murder, for shooting an unarmed woman in a no-knock raid, that when they went into that house, they knew that the person they were looking for was already captured? It is one of these moments that just boggles the mind.
Oop.
Are you there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those moments that just boggles the mind. I mean,
well, it does, but, you know, let's look at a couple other facts before you go down that road. The Attorney General of the state of Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, African-American, went on camera yesterday and said the raid was legal, that it really wasn't a no-knock. They announced themselves. As we know, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend fired his pistol as well. They then fired a huge number of bullets into the apartment, killing Breonna Taylor. And as you say, the person indicted was the person who was outside and shot through a window at another apartment. Nobody was charged with murder in her case. She died, yet another innocent Black person who was killed by police, and the outrage, of course, is that no one was charged with murder. But if the Attorney General is correct, if they just carried out the raid legally, they announced themselves and so on, then really it's the consequence of a botched raid. They should have known better what was going on, where they were going in. But did they really kill her purposely, or were they defending themselves? And that'll be the case, in the trial that comes up of the officer who was charged.
Yeah, I don't think she was killed purposely, but boy, you know, that's one thing that I've learned from people in police agencies, that when military people come into the police, they should already, in the military, and when you're in a battle zone, just about anything goes. No, you can't just kill civilians, but just about anything goes. But when you're in a police force, and I've been told this by numerous police officers, there are very, very, very laid out strict things about people getting killed that shouldn't be killed.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I think you put your finger on it there. From my point of view, watching, you know, developments over the years, it's the militarization of the police forces that kind of give them an aura that they are not just a SWAT team, but an invading army, and they have to shoot to kill wherever they go. And that's not a peacekeeper. That's a different kind of mentality that is now steeped into the minds of so many officers around the country. There's no doubt they need to protect themselves. There's no doubt they need to wear protective gear. And if they're up against a superior armed force, they need to have better arms. But conducting a raid early in the morning like that, I mean, where was the intelligence? Who do they think was in there? This obviously was not a well-carried-out raid, and that's the part of the outrage that has come and we've seen in Louisville with this return of just a single person indicted.
And make no mistake about it, I'm not one of these people that thinks that that you should get rid of police forces. Not at all. I think police policemen, just like firefighters and police forces, they're necessary. That, as a matter of fact, they used to be community supported. I think that everybody's got to take a step back and just figure out, I mean, should we really have police forces that are able to bring equipment out of the street and you've got Americans protesting legally and then send a heat wave or a... should
police... Well, this is exactly the point. We're turning these advanced weapons on our own citizens. That is, we talked last week, the heat wave, which would make you feel like you're such a sonic device, makes you feel like your skin's on fire. They decided it was unethical to use in Iraq, in a war there. Somehow they were trying to use it or thought about using it in Washington against the peaceful protesters, and I couldn't agree with you more. And, of course, the bottom line in Louisville is that the police killed Breonna Taylor and nobody was charged over that.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I just think back when, remember all of our embassy people in Cuba were getting sick because of hypersonic sound?
Right.
Guess what, folks? That's the same technology. I mean, it's just developed a couple different steps further. We are really in a, when you add the situation with the public's trust or distrust of police, the president threatening maybe not to follow the vote, and then you have basically the Senate and the House at odds with one another, and the Supreme Court up in the air. We are at a very critical time in our history.
Well, our institutions are under attack, and people who voted for Donald Trump, in a way, wanted that. They wanted somebody to shake up Washington. And, oh, man, has he, in ways that, you know, we could never anticipate, and in ways that suggest he doesn't want to leave. He's enjoying it too much. He thinks the first 4 years he should get a mulligan. He should get a do-over. He gets four more years tacked on. He's talked about that. And, you know, with him, I don't know if it's a joke. Can't tell.
Yep. All right, Brian, we'll see what happens, God forbid, in the next 7 days.
All right, my man. Great talking to you, as always.
Take care, Brian.
Okay, bye.
Brian Ross and Real News here on Robin Hood Radio.